This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight:
earlier on in the morning, residents of the capital, Asmara, showed up at the airport, decorated with traditional dresses, holding banners, flags of Ethiopia and Eritrea.
That's VOA's Tawalda Walda Gabriel at the airport in Asmara, as two passenger planes arrived from Addis Ababa for the first time in 20 years. Details next.
Also, South Africans are celebrating Mandela Day today. Nelson Mandela, a global icon and Nobel Peace Prize winner, would have been 100 years old today.
We'll have these stories and more right here on VOA Africa News Tonight. Our top story: the mood was joyous today at Asmara's International Airport as the first two passenger planes from Addis Ababa in 20 years arrived. The flights are among the rapid steps to rebuild the relationship between Eritrea and Ethiopia, a relationship severed in a war that began in 1998. Among the passengers was Ethiopia's former Prime Minister Hailemariam Desalegn. VOA's Tawalda Walda Gabriel was at the airport in Asmara when the flights landed. He spoke with our colleague Kate Pound Dawson and describes a scene of great happiness.
The mood was very exciting early on. Earlier on in the morning, residents of the capital, Asmara, showed up at the airport, decorated with traditional dresses, holding banners, flags of Ethiopia and Eritrea, singing the traditional song. Then, just before noon, the first plane just arrived. The former Prime Minister of Ethiopia, Hailemariam Desalegn, embarked along with the CEO of Ethiopian Airlines. And this group was welcomed by Eritrean Foreign Minister Osman Saleh and Eritrean Airlines officials.
There were two planes instead of just one. Why was that?
The first plane, which is bigger, I believe it's 787, was carrying officials and investors or business people only. These are, especially the investors, these are investors that they came here in Eritrea to look at possibilities of investing or buying shares in Eritrean economy. The second one was just carrying ordinary people, just guests. And these guests include not only Ethiopians, but also Eritreans who were separated from their families. So it was kind of very emotional, especially for these separated families when they just came today on the second plane.
Now, you were talking to people there at the airport. What were people saying?
Everybody is saying we have not enough words to describe the happiness and the joy. So other than dancing and, singing and just happy, we are happy. We are more than happy. We have no words. Very happy to be here. And everybody was thanking God. Thanks God. This happened. A dream came true.
Will the flights be daily, or do you know the schedule for the flights?
In the short plan, as far as the plan that is they schedule it, it's going to be daily. But I was also told that there is nothing like a permanent schedule for now. But tomorrow, another plane is coming, and guests from Eritrea also traveling back with the plane to Ethiopia. They have done the same today. Today, the second plane that was carrying the ordinary guests flew back to Ethiopia carrying guests.
That was our colleague, Tolde Wilde Gabriel, at the airport in Asmara, Eritrea. He spoke with VOA's Kate Pond Dawson.
South Africans are celebrating Mandela Day today. Nelson Mandela, a global icon and Nobel Peace Prize winner, would have been 100 years old today. His legacy as South Africa's first black president, along with his struggle against the country's apartheid system and reconciliation efforts after 27 years in prison, are being celebrated through a series of events that kicked off yesterday with the 16th Nelson Mandela Annual Lecture in Johannesburg. Former U.S. President Barack Obama delivered the speech and urged South Africans to embrace Mandela's vision of equality and justice for all citizens. Today in Johannesburg, Obama is speaking to 200 young Africans attending a five-day leadership course. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa was expected to spend the day at celebrations in Mandela's home province, Eastern Cape, where he was attending a tree planting ceremony and the opening of a clinic. He also says he's marking the day by donating half his salary to charity. Mandela's widow, Gracia Michelle, will lead a short walk in his memory. Nadia Sami is covering today's celebrations in Johannesburg. I spoke with her about the activities and Mandela's legacy.
Every year on the 18th of July, South Africans mark Mandela Day, and everyone is basically called upon to do 67 minutes of something good. The 67 minutes comes from the amount of years that Mandela spent in public service. And so examples of what people will do is pack lunches or food parcels for those in need, or go to old age homes and read to the elderly. Some will go to local parks and basically clean up the park. There's a dental group which is providing 67 sets of dentures for old people who can't afford them. Others will go to orphanages and paint where there's a need to paint. Essentially, everybody is just being approached to harness the legacy of Nelson Mandela and to really think about the years of sacrifice that he put in to motivate you to do good for others.
And looking at Nelson Mandela's legacy for South Africa, when you see how today is with the high unemployment, still there's a lot of corruption and land reform. So how are they viewing Nelson Mandela's legacy?
I think for most South Africans, they will remember him as someone who was a unifying figure, as someone who was able to forgive huge atrocities. For example, at the recent Mandela lecture, which was delivered by former U.S. President Barack Obama, Mandela's widow, Gracia Michelle, spoke about him, and she said that she will always remember him as a simple, grounded, and humble man. That said, there are many people who criticize Mandela for the way in which apartheid ended. Many of his critics believe that he took a very soft approach to the white oppressors during the apartheid regime as it was wrapping up. Many of them say that he made too many concessions as he negotiated democracy for South Africa, and they would say that we still live with some of the consequences of that today. So it is a mixed bag, but the overwhelming sentiment towards him is favorable.
Also, Nadia, how are political parties in South Africa embracing Nelson Mandela's policies?
A lot of political parties will try to bring in Mandela's name as they navigate these circumstances and kind of ask how would Mandela have dealt with this, and try to encourage people to harness some of these approaches to negotiations to try and find an amicable end to these things. But then all political parties in South Africa, you'll find now almost every political party will try to attach themselves to Mandela's legacy. You know, we've got a general election coming up in 2019, and Mandela's legacy is something that everybody kind of wants to own.
Also, how do young people view Mandela in terms of the problems of today and his vision? Do they see his vision as very applicable to today's problems?
I think that a lot of young people try to take what they can from his teachings, to be self-aware, to listen to the other party, to recognize what the facts of the matter are, and to do no harm to others. Also, adding their voices to the criticism of Mandela. A lot of young people today feel unhappy with the way apartheid ended. A lot of them feel that there were no real proper repercussions for the white oppressors. while they do try to harness the positive aspects, Mandela was a lawyer, he was a great negotiator, he was a great orator, and so young people do certainly take those lessons from him. But what I do find with the younger generation coming through is that I think takes a more balanced view at his legacy and what he leaves behind.
That was journalist Nadia Sammy. She spoke with me from Johannesburg.
As we just heard, July 18th would have been the 100th birthday of the late Nelson Mandela, the South African freedom fighter and president, which much is known about his public life and principles until now. There has been scant knowledge of his intimate struggles as a husband and father behind bars. That changed this week with the publication of the prison letters of Nelson Mandela. VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with the book's South African editor and an African-American commentator and attended a dramatic reading of Mandela's prison letters in New York.
A widely diverse crowd, black and white, young, old, and other, filled the Symphony Space Auditorium, eager to hear some of the previously unpublished letters Nelson Mandela had written from prison. The letters are drenched in powerful and inspired rhetoric, but there is heartfelt worry and concern for loved ones as well. Here is an abbreviated excerpt from a letter Mandela wrote on May 13, 1974, 10 years into his life sentence, as read by the actor Hisham Tofik. In it, Mandela implored South Africa's justice minister to allow Winnie Mandela, his wife and fellow activist, to be allowed to live with relatives or friends. It was her husband's third plea on her behalf.
She suffers from an illness which is caused by worry and tension and which has on occasions rendered her unconscious. Believe me when I say that I have, since September last year, lived in a real nightmare. I cannot get myself to accept that you could remain indifferent where the very life of another human being is actually involved.
For millions, Nelson Mandela embodied great ideals. Dignity, humility, perseverance, and after 27 years of harsh prison time, forgiveness. But, says Sam Venter, who edited the prison letters, the world tends not to dwell on what exactly it was that Mandela forgave.
And I think that these letters paint a picture of a life of more than 10,000 days behind bars that he had to endure really bad treatment and separation from his family, and that is what he forgave, so that he could come out and talk to his enemy, which he called them, so that the rest of us could live in a democracy eventually.
Tayari Jones is a creative writing professor at Emory University and the author of the novel An American Marriage, which examines the impact of incarceration on a prisoner and his wife, largely through their letters to each other. Jones appreciates how Mandela's prison letters express the private side of this very public figure.
He was seen as superhuman. That was his image. That was how he operated symbolically. But when you read the letters, you see that no, he's not superhuman. He's deeply human.
At first, Mandela was allowed to write only one 500-word letter every 6 months. Many of those letters were heavily censored or shredded by prison authorities without explanation. He was not permitted to attend his mother's funeral or the last rites for his 24-year-old son, Tembe. Mandela's youngest children barely knew him before his release. They could not visit him until they were 16. Indeed, Mandela, the political prisoner, often posed an agonizing dilemma to Mandela, the loving family man, as we hear in this letter from April 1, 1971, as read by the actress Khandala Rashad.
Is one justified in neglecting his family on the ground of involvement in larger issues? Is it right for one to condemn one's young children and aging parents to poverty and starvation in the hope of saving the wretched multitudes of this world? These are questions that torment me daily.
Yet later in the same letter, Mandela indicates that his troubled preoccupation with those questions had finally dissolved
and led to greater certainty as to the correctness of my stand. I hope I have in the process gained a priceless reward, an objective and activated conscience, the ability to dream of golden ages, to live for what could be.
These are words that continue to inspire in 2018, nearly 50 years after they were penned inside a prison cell, and 5 years after Mandela's death as a free man at the age of 94. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Swuhib, 20 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. The mood was joyous today at Asmara's International Airport as the first two passenger planes from Addis Ababa in 20 years arrived. Nelson Mandela's legacy as South Africa's first black president, along with his struggle against the country's apartheid system and reconciliation efforts, is being celebrated throughout South Africa this week. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
The UNAIDS agency says deaths and new HIV infections are dropping globally, but there are signs of complacency where entire regions are suffering increases in cases. In a new report released today, UNAIDS says new infections dropped by 18% in the past 7 years and now are just over half of the 1996 peak of 3.4 million. The report says Eastern and Southern Africa, the areas most affected by AIDS, have made the strongest gains, cutting the new HIV infections by 30% and AIDS-related deaths by 42% since 2010. By comparison, AIDS deaths have fallen by just 24% in Western and Central Africa. The report says Nigeria has 51% of the HIV burden in the region, with new HIV infections declining by only 5% in 7 years, and only one in three people living with HIV is on treatment. New HIV infections have increased by more than a quarter in the Middle East and North Africa over the past 20 years and have doubled in Eastern Europe and Central Asia.
Kenya's Ministry of Tourism and Wildlife said yesterday that a ninth black rhino has died after being relocated to a new sanctuary in a national park. The ministry says preliminary investigations indicate the rhinos died of salt poisoning after drinking water with high salinity. VOA's Rael Ombor has the latest.
The latest black rhino death reported Tuesday brings the number of deaths in the Bosch relocation operation to 9. Only two of the transplanted black rhinos remain in the new habitat at Tsavo East National Park. The Kenya Wildlife Service says the relocation was meant to establish a viable population in the new sanctuary and to safeguard the endangered species from poaching. A team led by Kenya's Police Investigative Unit will look into exactly what caused the deaths and how it happened and give a report in a week's time. Najib Balala is Kenya's Cabinet Secretary for Tourism and Wildlife.
And the team that is going to lead the investigation will be a senior officer from the CID office, the Criminal Investigation Office. Then we will attach somebody from my office. There will be the University of Nairobi, the Vet Department. There'll be the Vet Department also at the Ministry of Agriculture.
Balala said the deaths were unprecedented in KWS operations, necessitating both external and independent investigations. The secretary showed photos of rhino horns he said belonged to the deceased animals to confirm that all the horns were secured by KWS after their death. Earlier, Kenyans on social media had voiced suspicion the rhinos were killed for their horns, which are coveted in Asia as status symbols for their mythical healing qualities. Balala said the two remaining rhinos in the park are being monitored closely.
We have confirmed this morning with the park management that they're in good health.
Rhino populations across Africa have dropped dramatically in recent years, mainly due to poachers. According to the Kenya Wildlife Service, Kenya had a rhino population of 1,258 as of 2017. This figure included 745 black rhinos. Rael Ombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
The United Nations Human Rights Office reports an alarming surge of intercommunal violence in Mali's central Mopti region. The UN says hundreds have been killed in recent months as rival communities fight over land and water resources. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Deadly disputes over land and water have been going on for decades among the Fulani herders and Bambara and Dogon farmers in Mali's Mopti region. But the spokesman for the UN Human Rights Office, Rupert Colville, says the current intercommunal violence has taken a particularly nasty, worrisome turn for the worse.
In recent weeks, UN human rights staff in the country have documented an alarming trend of civilians being driven from their homes, either after being directly targeted themselves because of the community they belong to, or after deadly attacks on members of their community in neighboring villages.
Colville says MINUSMA, the UN peacekeeping mission in Mali, has documented 99 incidents of intercommunal violence since the beginning of the year, resulting in at least 289 civilian deaths. He says three-quarters have occurred in Mopti, the vast majority since May. The ethnic groups accuse each other of having ties with al-Qaeda-linked terrorists who have been operating in the region since 2012. Colville says MINUSMA has documented dozens of particularly brutal attacks in villages, mosques, and homes. He says civilians, young children and elderly alike, have been shot, in some cases burnt alive, inside their homes.
This escalating violence in parts of the Mopti region has led to widespread displacement of a civilian population already vulnerable due to a lack of protection and basic social services provided by the state.
The UN Human Rights Office is calling on Malian authorities to take urgent measures to prevent further serious violations and abuses of human rights in the region, including those committed by government forces. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Afori, and our engineer, Suleiman Terawali, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Are you wandering around lost in a musical desert? Well, follow your ears to the fantastic, the one and only African Music Mix on the Voice of America. Bathe yourself in this musical oasis. From the north to the south and from the east to the west, the African Music Mix plays only the best.
Yes, sir. Two Face, NATO C. Hey.
Tune in at 200, 300, 1200, and 1300 UTC GMT. Every day, right here on VOA Africa.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.